Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
One of the best in the business. Did it for a long time with Sports Illustrated. Now writing for us at CBS. Jonah Carey joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. Jonah, as big a baseball guy as you are, do you count down the days? Do you watch? Do you start your schedule for the upcoming season? How do you prepare less than 2 weeks out from the start of another year?
Well, I think I'm a little atypical in that I'm not a beat writer, so I'll, you know, sit and crunch numbers and watch tons of spring training games. And, you know, people kind of turn their nose up at fantasy sometimes, but I believe that fantasy can help you a lot. You know, oh, well, this guy, wait a minute, watch out for the backup second baseman for the Twins. He could be coming on, too, and it kind of helps your research, too. So it's all of the above, and it's tons of fun. I like being able to get into it. February and March is honestly, other than October, my favorite time of year.
You and I both. Let me get your take on this. You mentioned you're watching spring training. If I'm not watching, I'm surely checking every box score after the day is over and done with, and I analyze it through the eyes of a, yes, baseball fan, a baseball talk show host, and also a fantasy baseball player. So I take all those things into consideration when I'm crunching the numbers, checking the box scores after every single game. I know certain people go, why would you ever read a preseason box score? It is completely useless, and it means nothing. And I know other people who believe that because a guy goes 2 for 3 2 days in a row in spring training means he should move up and be a top 5-round draft pick in fantasy baseball. There are some who overreact and some who underreact, in my opinion. How do you decide how much weight you put in evaluating spring training?
By the way, for fantasy, I just did my draft yesterday. It's baseball, basketball, and football all in one. You could literally draft LeBron in one round, Tom Brady in the next, and Clayton Kershaw in the next. You should abandon regular fantasy sports and do this. It's the best thing ever.
Okay.
I'm a giant nerd. It's fantastic. Anyway, the answer to your question on spring training box scores and things like that is you're looking for changes in circumstances. I think that's how you make it relevant. You know, small sample size, you have to be careful about, oh, the guy went 2 for 4, don't overreact. But let's say you have a guy like Ohtani, right? We don't know anything about this guy. He played in Japan. We know that he's talented. But we want to see what he can do against live action, you know, against big league players. So we put that in. Even a guy like Noah Syndergaard. Syndergaard, a great track record, of course. But, wow, lots of injuries last year. We want to see if he's got his velocity back. We want to see if he's got his command back. Those are the things that matter. So I think there is something to it. Aside from the excitement of it, it's just really getting a feel for guys who we don't know what's going to happen. This is their first test. And at least in Syndergaard's case, he's certainly passed it quite well so far.
Do you also handicap managers in spring training? Because we've got a bunch of new managers, some of which are on really important teams this year, like the Red Sox and the Yankees, two playoff teams last year who decided to go in another direction. How much handicapping of the manager do you have to do?
Two former colleagues of mine, I used to do Baseball Tonight on ESPN with both Alex Cora and Aaron Boone at like 1:30 in the morning eating hard-boiled eggs in the green room. So it's amazing that they're managing the Red Sox and the Yankees. It's so cool. They're great dudes and they're really smart. You're looking for that, certainly. But here's what I'd say about managers. Despite the fact that I'm a statistical guy, in my opinion, the way to evaluate managers is not necessarily how the guy bunts or is he steals as many bases or whatever. You're really looking for how they can manage a clubhouse because it's 162 games and October. There's just so much friction that can occur. You want to keep guys up if you can. You want to be able to handle things around the margins. This relief pitcher needs an extra day of rest. It's those little things that matter. And frankly, it's very hard to quantify. So, you know, spring training, I get it. It's certainly an introduction. But honestly, the best test of this stuff can be like in August when, you know, it's the dog days and you don't know what's happening. And, you know, this guy could be fighting with this guy and this guy's in a slump and this bullpen guy's wearing down. That's when you want to see it. So I'm excited for Booney. I'm excited for Alex. But I think you have to look at it over the long haul in cases like that.
We're talking to Jonah Carey from CBS Sports, Inside Baseball Insider, here with us on CBS Sports Radio. Big free agent, Jake Arrieta, came off the market this week, lands with Philly, makes a lot of sense. Philly had more than a enough salary cap space to fit him in. Of course, there's no cap in baseball, but the Phillies' overall salary structure had been well below the kind of crowds that they can draw in the TV contracts that they have. So I thought it was a real good signing for them, and I think one that could work out well for Adam, because Phillies have enough good young players that you can project them to be competitive within a year or two. Mm-hmm. But there's still two big ones sitting out there in Cobb and Holland, both of which are above-average players. And yep. I just don't understand how they're still available with 11 days left to go, unless they are refusing to react to the market that it came back soft this year and teams just aren't paying. Are these guys taking an inappropriate stance? Are they pushing the envelope, or have they just kind of overplayed their hand and misevaluated what teams would do?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it, well, it's actually true that a big part of it has to do with a couple things. Number one, the old Maverick owner, you know, the guy who would say, I don't care. I'm going to spend $200 million on this guy. That's it. Unfortunately, we lost Mike Ilitch, the owner of the Tigers. He was like that. He signed Prince Fielder for $214 million. That didn't work out so well. So we've got that. And then we've got, you know, Yankees, Dodgers, Giants, Red Sox. Teams like that are all up against the luxury tax this year, so they're really tamping it down. Of course, the Yankees traded for Stanton. But other than that, we haven't seen those teams go out and get big-ticket free agent signings because they're all trying to clear the decks, reset that kind of escalating luxury tax, and then make themselves available for next year when you've got Harper and Machado and Donaldson and maybe Kershaw. So that's what's going on. So, yeah, you know, you look at this year's offseason, who's making the big signings? Milwaukee? Minnesota? I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here. You know, Philly? These are teams that you wouldn't necessarily expect. So I don't know if it's a case of them overplaying their hand as much as just this confluence of events has been absolutely wild. I'll tell you one team that should be in on Holland, though. What about the Angels? You know, the Angels go out and get Kinsler and Cozart and Ohtani. They've got the best player on the planet, Mike Trout. Their bullpen's not very good. They got Steve Bedrosian's kid and a couple of, you know, not great players. Why not go out and get an experienced reliever like Holland? I can't imagine that he's asking for a 3 or 4 year deal at this point. That to me would seem like a perfect, perfect fit, even this late in spring training.
And although Holland had the better year of the two pitchers, I'm going through teams, like you say, for fantasy purposes and the like. Other than the Astros, I don't know that there's a team in baseball that's five deep in a rotation. I'm sorry, yeah. Jordan Montgomery's still a question mark to me, Yankee fans. But it just doesn't exist. And Alex Cobb fits with every single team. Houston is the only team that I can't make an argument for. You add Alex Cobb to the rotation, he's one of their five. Is he overpricing himself from what you hear?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I will say that Lance Lynn would seem to be a comp. Those guys have had similar production in recent years. They're slightly better than average pitchers. And don't underestimate the value of innings. If you just produce league average numbers, but it's over 185, 190 innings, that's huge in today's game because more and more we're seeing bullpens come in. Guys are tired after 5 1/3, or the manager just doesn't want their starter to have to go through the third time through the order. So you need to have guys who can soak up innings. Cobb did have some injury issues, but last year did soak up innings. He seems like such an obvious fit. I think in the old market, yeah, that's probably, you know, 3 years, $45 million, something like that. Nowhere close now. Lynn got a one-year deal. I think that's what we're talking about for Cobb at this point, just because of this, you know, confluence of circumstance.
Now, a couple of years ago, the Cubs took some grief. They dealt with it. They went away. They won a World Series, so it is now long since forgotten. But they took some grief when they sent Chris Bryant down at the beginning of the season. He was their most productive hitter in spring training, but they pretty much let everybody know he's not going to start the year in the big club. We'll wait 2 or 3 weeks to make sure it doesn't qualify as a full year, and we'll make sure we've got him 6-plus years to start his career before he's potentially a free agent. Are the Braves looking at that same type of a situation with Ronald Acuna? And if so, are they going to be able to get a pass if they do this and get the critique because the Cubs were able to survive it because they went on to win the World Series? I don't know that Atlanta is in that kind of shape.
Yeah, to paraphrase the Lion King, Acuna Matata, let's save $20 million. That's basically what we're talking about here. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what it is. Chris Bryant is like that. Evan Longoria was like that. He went on to win Rookie of the Year and, you know, was almost an MVP candidate in his rookie season. So teams are not dumb. They're getting that. I mean, if you have a prospect that's not quite that good, you could even hold him out until end of May, early June, and try to avoid that kind of Super 2 arbitration in addition. But Acuna's so good, you have to figure it's one of those 12-game scenarios that he would come up. But, I mean, the Braves are not going to contend this year. That's the big difference. The Cubs got a lot of grief specifically because they were so good in that season, had the potential to be so good. So why are you holding this guy back? If Acuna came up opening day and hit 45 home runs, the Braves are still not winning anything this season. So I think that's the difference. To me, it's, you know, he reminds me a lot of Andrew Jones in that way because he's so precocious, and the way that Jones was, don't forget those two home runs in game one of the World Series that year. And Acuña has that kind of skill set. It's a five-tool skill set. He can come up at a really young age. I mean, even younger than guys like Trout came up and really do some damage. So, yeah, if they put him in the lineup right now, he'd instantly become, what, the second-best player on the team behind Freddie Freeman? So it's pretty impressive what he can do, and it does seem likely that they're going to hold him back.
Understood and agreed, but I still think they should take grief for it. Will the players, because I know we're looking forward and we still have several years to go before the next collective bargaining agreement comes up, with what shook out this year in free agency, and if we get into the same argument about just keeping players down to easily be seen, hold their salaries in check, and keep them from getting to free agency sooner, is this going to be a massive fight in the next CBA?
Honestly, I think that's not nearly as big a fight as the thing that we talked about one or two questions before. What the heck's happened to free agency? You know that, yeah, okay, we're trying to save this guy from going to free agency, but if free agency is going to return a bunch of one-year deals, what are we really talking about? Now, I think the true test will be this coming offseason. Again, go back to Harper, Machado, Donaldson, and maybe Kershaw. If those guys are getting 35 per, 40 per, and they're getting monster deals, okay, fine. But I wonder about that middle class of players. I wonder if people say, yeah, you know what, we can find a Lance Lynn under a rock. Doesn't really matter. Oh, yeah, Mike Moustakas. There's a bunch of Moustakases out there. It's no big deal. That's what could really hurt the rank and file, because there's only so many Bryce Harpers in the world. There's a whole lot of Lance Lynn. That, to me, is the big fight. And, you know, an Asian came out this offseason and used the C word, collusion. You know, you have to be really careful about this stuff because baseball has had this history. 30 years ago, Andre Dawson, Tim Raines, Jack Morris, you had some of the best players in all of baseball. They were flat-out colluded against, you know, and an arbitrator came out and ruled against it. I don't think this is collusion in that way, but you definitely have a case where teams are sort of evaluating the market and saying, nah, we're good. And that's a big problem. You know, players are trying to make more money, and they're getting a smaller and smaller share of the pie. If you go back to 2012, the split in revenue was 58% for the players and 42% for the owners. That's flipped now. It's close to 60% for the owners, roughly, at this point. That is a dramatic change in just a few years, and the players cannot be happy about it. Yes, everybody's making money. That's certainly true. But the owners are making a disproportionate amount of it, and the players have the right to complain about it. That doesn't seem very fair.
All right. Last question, Jonah, and take a second if you need to think about this. This past year in football, the final four teams were the Eagles, the Vikings, the Jaguars, and the Patriots.
Yes.
Only one of the four had made the playoffs the year before, and that, of course, was New England. The Jags, the Eagles, and the Vikings all were at home when the playoffs started the previous season. Shoot, the Eagles ended up winning the championship, even though they hadn't made the playoffs the year before. If I discount the five teams in each league that made the playoffs last year in baseball, take those 10, put them aside, you can pick any of the other 20 teams. Which team has the best chance to be in a championship round and make the Final Four of baseball in 2018?
Now, Milwaukee comes to mind immediately. They just missed last year, and they really were aggressive this offseason, going out and trading for Christian Yelich, trading away significant prospects to do it, spending $80 million on Lorenzo Cain. You know, it's really interesting stuff what they've done this offseason. Jimmy Nelson was their best pitcher last year. He's hurt, but he'll come back at the All-Star break. So if this team is hanging around, they basically are able to trade the equivalent of trading for a number one starter without doing anything. They just add him to the lineup. And, you know, if that's the case, we could see them make moves at the deadline and try to push because, again, we go back to what it is with the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and teams like that. The Stanton move is huge. But in terms of spending, those teams did not go over the top. So you've got a situation where, yeah, Houston's great. Yeah, the Dodgers are going to be great. But it's doable. There's a team or two that could sneak in. Milwaukee, to me, stands out as one that really, really shapes up to have the potential talent and the experience to do it. They fell just short last year. Conceivable they do it this year.
I know they added two big bats in that outfield and paid good money for Kane, but you're telling me Milwaukee couldn't use with an addition of Alex Cobb? If they were supposedly in on Arrieta, how are they not in on Cobb?
It's a great question. And Mark Attanasio, their owner, is a really interesting cat. He's an L.A.-based money manager. I've had a chance to meet with him once or twice, and he's aggressive. You know, despite it being a small market, it's more like what it was in the 70s. Don't forget, you had McDonald's, you had the Kroc family owning the Padres, you had the heir to the Seagram's fortune owning the Montreal Expos. It didn't really matter where you played. It was just about who owned the team. And I wonder if you could slowly see that shift a little bit in Milwaukee, and that would seem to make sense for somebody like Cobb. Listen, it's not over. Cobb is still out there. Maybe Milwaukee changes their mind. Maybe they do it on April the 5th. We'll see, but I completely agree with you. If you're looking for an arm, that's a team that could use an arm more than almost any team, given not only that they need pitching, but that they're right on the cusp here. This is like an 86-win team. Get me a 2- or 3-win starter, push it over the top. Very, very interesting if that were to happen.
Jonah, good stuff. Appreciate it. Whenever you come aboard, we'll talk plenty during the season. Enjoy the rest of spring training.
Thank you, sir.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.